Extraneous.
Extraneous, His Dark Materials.
We are here to finish the season of The Subtle Knife, which just aired on HBO Max. I'm Melissa.
I'm Will.
And this is Extraneous, the podcast that takes stories you love, comes back, and wait, what's
we
our
go,
line?
We go deep. We go deep on the stories, and we come back with a little something extra.
Yes, that.
That.
This week, we're finishing season two of His Dark Materials, the seventh episode, and we have a lot of thoughts about it.
Oh, so many thoughts.
Little note on what's going to happen here. Next week, we'll do a wrap-up episode about the series. This week, it's a little bit of a hot take edition. We're going to kind of keep it loose. Hope that's
cool.
because we have been so busy with the holidays. We hope you're having a good one, though.
Mm-hmm. We do.
And then we're going to take a week off, so there's going to be an episode next week, then not an episode the week after, and then we're going to start Amber Spyglass. We're ready to go right into the third book.
Oh, yeah. We are jumping in. Get your reading along with us.
Muscles ready. Going, boots on.
Not sure the metaphor here.
You're going to need to read the first two chapters of Amber Spyglass.
That's right. We're doing two chapters at a time, so we'll start jumping in with chapters one and two. But before we get to that, we should remind you, this is a Mischief Media podcast.
Yes, it is.
If you enjoy this podcast, if you enjoy this sort of thing, you should check out mischiefmedia.com. It's a whole slate of awesome podcasts by awesome people talking about awesome things. Details on the website.
Yeah. Look up Mischief Media on whatever podcast listener you are listening to us on.
Mm-hmm. Should we get into it?
Let's do it.
Yeah. Man.
Okay, y'all.
Melissa talked me off the ledge a little bit on this before we hit record.
I just want to give a shout out to Reddit, because when we first watched this episode, we watched it a couple times now, we felt like maybe we ate something wrong at Christmas, maybe mm-hmm. we were in a little bit of a bad mood, maybe we weren't giving it enough credit, and Reddit, you know, convinced us none of that was true, and all of our feelings were probably pretty founded in reality.
Yeah, totally. The recaps we read were weirdly generous, I thought. It seemed like they were watching something different than I was watching. But
the lore of having screeners from HBO is a very powerful drug.
1,000%. And I also think that in the States, this is not a very well-covered show. Like, none of the sort of like pop culture podcasts or anything that I listen to that are really talking about it. The ones who talk about the Queen's Gambit, and they talk about, I don't know, whatever the sort of
tiny
relevant
pretty things. Are we talking about tiny pretty things? Which we just blasted through with a delicious popcorn eating Sapphire Fair to it all.
It totally was. I don't think that also will be covered.
Missing a big story there.
Yeah. But do you know what I mean? It's like, it's HDM in the US at least was never really part of the conversation. And so the critical eye was never turned to it. And I think that if it was, it would be fairly unkind, much more unkind than we have been.
Yeah, because we were really cheering. I want to like preface everything we're going to say today with, we're really cheering for this show's success. Obviously, we make a podcast about it. We want people to be watching this show so that we can have a really fruitful conversation with our audience about mm-hmm. it. We want you to all be on this journey with us. And the more watched the show is, the more likely that is to happen. We love the story, and I have a lot of thoughts about whether this story is what's the word I'm looking for? Adaptable. Whether this story is adaptable for the screen. I'm starting to think it resists adaptation. This is definitely the best version that there's been of it, but I have serious doubts about if the scale of what these books are about can really be translated. So anyway, all that said, we really, really, really want it to be so good. Hold on. We really, really, really want it to be so good, so when we have bad things to say about it, no, it hurts us hard.
It is, yeah, we would much rather come on here and rave about how awesome it was, and did you see this, and did you see that, and there'll be some of that today. You know,
absolutely.
Even the episodes we did not particularly like are replete with things that we loved, especially Pan's Big Fat Panda Face.
Big Fat Panda Face. Okay, before we actually get into the episode, we have to talk about the news that there will be a season 3.
Yeah, there will.
The BBC just announced it.
Uh-huh, there will not. apparently be a season four, though.
I'm already you've got me on the ledge here. Season four. You needed a season. How are they going to do Amber Spyglass in eight? We can't do Amber Spyglass in eight episodes.
Mm-mm.
And we have as much time as we want.
Yeah, I really worry that we're going to get spoilers to come for Amber Spyglass. We're going to get one episode of Mulefa and then like maybe one and a half episodes in the underworld and then like one big battle episode. And it's all just going to be like, then this happened, then that happened, then this happened, then that happened.
Meanwhile, there's like a war against man and earth and heaven and every Azrael's really laying it on that there's the biggest war ever is coming and they have to start it in season three with only eight episodes to go. That's Game of Thrones didn't do that. And it was rushed.
Yeah, right. I agree. Not even having a 10 episode arc. I don't know when this changed. It used to be the prestige television, at least in the US, you would have 10 episodes a piece, and then Thrones started cutting that down, probably because Thrones was so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're looking at like 7 and 8 episode seasons.
Do you know what I think this changed? I think this changed, oh God, this is a larger conversation, but I think this changed with network being less important. I think this changed with streaming. With streaming, you can make the show you want to make, and you're not taking up a slot that's airing on television on. Like, this is airing on the BBC 1 hour a week, so they only have a certain amount of real estate at a very big family, in a very big family time slot. They only have that Sunday at whatever hour time for a certain number of weeks, and it has to end by Christmas. And so if you're going to expand, you have to be just raking it in. It has to be so popular. It has to be so important.
That you rearrange your entire network schedule.
And they just don't have it for this.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. If this had been just streaming, I think we would be looking at something different.
That is a great point. I think that's probably right. I wish HBO had been able to take more of an active hand here. I feel like they could have spent the budget necessary and sort of brought in maybe a higher quality level of writer or writer's room. Obviously, HBO is far from perfect, and we've talked on this and other pods about Game of Thrones and all that, but I just think that the show is so stuck in trying to be a bunch of different things, a faithful adaptation, a fun kids show for, 13-year-olds to watch on a Friday night or wherever it is, or Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
And the result is a bit of a mush. So
well, that sounds like we're super excited for season three. But we are. I mean, listen, I want to see the Mulefa. I want to see how they're going to pull this off. It's definitely going to be better than one movie over one whole book. You know, so we're excited about it. I am cautiously optimistic.
Same.
I will always be cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to go into anything.
And I think if they use the same number of writers, number of female writers that they used in this season, which was, I truly believe, responsible for the upwards quality of most of the writing in this season, then it could be good.
Mm-hmm.
It could be good. Don't envy their task. Don't envy it at all.
No, not an easy thing to adapt. I think I'm a little more optimistic than you about this being an adaptable story. But definitely not easy.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the ending of this one before we get too far into the Amber Spyglass. Let's do it.
The ending. Yeah. Okay.
The
ending of this season.
This episode. Let's talk about this episode. Okay. Let's start with the witches. Their whole deal.
Yeah. I thought there were a lot of inconsistencies with the witches, especially this episode compared to the other episodes.
Yeah. We're going to point out over the course of this episode, especially as compared to the other episodes, there's a lot of inconsistency in the storytelling, and these little things are not necessarily taken on their own that big of a deal. But when there's enough of them, especially when the other episodes seemed as though they were being really careful about the world building and really, really respectful to the story, but when there's enough of these little things where it's like, did you care enough? It's not a matter of was this budget or whatever. Did you care enough to do this in the way that is consistent? Mistakes happen, but when it happens repeatedly, it starts to have an effect, at least on me, as a watcher, as an audience member, that you either think I'm dumb or you don't care enough to keep things in a consistent world. So, were you about to go into the Spectre thing?
that is one thing. I was going to start with the witches. It's very unclear just how powerful and strong the witches are.
Yes.
Because we should talk about Mrs. Coulter gets the drop on the witch in Chitagatse.
Really easily.
Yeah, and I understand that it's because the monkey got the witch's demon. And maybe that is the key. Like, how do you defeat a witch? You get to its demon before it notices you. But this is, in previous scenes, just a few episodes ago, we've seen like a single witch take out an entire battalion of trained and heavily armed soldiers. And the fact that Mrs. Coulter is able to just repeatedly get the jump on these witches, like, I don't understand why this witch couldn't just pull out one of her knives or something and stick it in Mrs. Coulter's throat. I mean, we see in a previous episode, Mrs. Coulter herself master her demons getting beaten up. But the witches, who are supposed to be like superhuman almost in their combat ability, are easily bested by Mrs. Coulter.
So in the book, this, she does get the best of Lena Felt, who is the witch who's coming in, because she's curious. Lena Felt lets her curiosity get the better of her, so she loses the jump. Also, Mrs. Coulter is more powerful. She has the specters all around her in the book, you know?
Yeah.
But this isn't that.
No, I mean, I think importantly, in the book, it's the specter that gets to the demon. And, like, we know what the specters can do. In the book, they're consistently very dangerous to humans and to witches.
Yeah, but in the book, Mrs. Coulter knew she was there the whole time. Mrs. Coulter does get the jump on her in the book. It's not just the specter. Mrs. Coulter kind of, like, calls out the witch for lurking and then tortures her with the specter for the information. So it's, like, sort of the same. But it's it does not read the same way. It is not. She just... The weird thing here is she takes her little cuff weapon and she tries to kill Mrs. Coulter. Like, she does it a second too late. And Mrs. Coulter gets the better of her, and her demon grabs the witch's demon. And suddenly the witch is like, why are you doing this? If you're going to try and kill somebody, why they're doing it is so that you don't kill them. Why are you acting surprised? You just tried to kill her. So
yeah, that moment made no sense. And it's so confusing watching it. It's like, wait, what is the relationship between these people? Is the witch there to save this human? Which I think we're supposed to understand from the previous episode that Lena Felt went back to Chitagatse because there were reports of a human adult there, and so she was going to save her.
Right.
Which is, it's like, it's a weird, sloppy detour. Also, we never find out what those... So the witches have these, like, knife-looking things around their wrists in this episode. I haven't gone back...
Other episodes, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they've never touched them or done anything with them.
In, like, the last 2-3 episodes, you've seen them kind of finger them.
Okay.
Or it's, like, a this-season development that definitely wasn't there. I mean, it's not what Ruta Scotti used to kill the cardinal.
Mm-mm. It's not what Serafina Pecola used to take out the airship. She was using a different kind of knife, like a very recognizable knife.
Like an actual knife, yeah.
And the fact that we see them now, they like finger these things. They never pull them out. What are they? Are they going to throw them? Are they going to stab them? Do they shoot something? I just can't believe that you would show us this for so many times and never actually show us using them.
I'm less puffed up about this than Will is. It's a weapon. They're going for it. They don't get there. I think it is as simple as that. But I also think you can't set up the witches as this unbelievably powerful force, can take out airships, can take out this, can take out that, but crumbles in front of Mrs. Coulter, who actually only had one specter with her that wasn't quite there. Like,
yeah.
It is uneven and inconsistent storytelling. We know in the book why she gets the better of the witch. It's obvious. It's believable. She's outnumbered. Mrs. Coulter has eyes everywhere. Mm-hmm. This is not that.
Right.
And so we're going on and on about this, but it's just... There's a lack of consistency to the abilities and the world building that does start to take a toll on the storyline. And that's what's starting to come back and back on us with this.
Totally. Right down to the end of the scene where when the specter eats the witch's demon, the witch falls down dead.
Right.
Which is completely different than every other person. Like, we've seen now 3 different people get spectered and still like walk around, but they're blank, like in the book.
Right. And Tullio, as you pointed out, actually... fell over when he got spectred, but then in the next episode he's on his feet. It makes no sense.
It's like, did the specter her, or did the specter kill her? It's just, it's like no one is asking these questions. And for a story that is so driven by its canon and its world building, to just be so casual about this in the finale is just, I don't understand it.
Well, okay. I don't want this whole episode to be us being really bad. But we get really upset about things not, about the opportunity being there and it being, wasted. So for instance, everybody spends all this time traveling, but Mrs. Coulter, I don't know, apparated, wrote a specter to Lyra.
She just showed up.
Everybody spent three episodes traveling through the wilderness, and Mrs. Coulter does it in the time that Will and John Perry have a hurried conversation.
Yeah.
These little things, sometimes they want to explain the lore, sometimes they don't want to explain the lore, and they might think, well, this is what we have time to do, but that it's not without cost.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
The kids going up the mountain.
Jumping to Mary, and Mary escorts these kids to their parents, who we never see, who are apparently in the mountains somewhere. Like, why did the kids need Mary? Mary doesn't know the way. Like,
right. Mary doesn't know the way. They are not in danger from the specters. If the parents are safe in the mountains, why did they need Mary? Mm-hmm. And she also says, like, I'll go and I'll protect your parents, but then when they get to the top of the hill, she's like, well, okay, go find your parents, bye. Which just choose.
Yeah, it's like, why do we have this 10 minutes of screen time? Why is Mary Malone still in Chitagatse? So that they could none of it makes any sense. None of it adds to the story. It all just raises questions, and to me it just reads as like no one did a second draft of the script asking these, like, hey, wait, what about this obvious hole?
It feels like they really need a continuity editor, somebody whose job it is to know these books incredibly well, to go back and make sure that knows how to work with lore, that it's fine if you make a change because you're translating something into a new medium, you're going to have to make changes, but you have to make sure that change is consistent.
Right.
And you have to make sure it doesn't affect the story, and you have to ask the right questions, and you have to wonder.
Yeah, and even if these books didn't exist, the Mary Malone storyline in this episode would make no sense, given what we see on screen. So,
yes. So what else about the witches?
I
swear there are things we liked about this episode.
Here's the thing I did like about the witches. I thought the actors playing the roles did really well.
I agree with that. Ruta Scotti, I think to another inconsistency, but Ruta Scotti went off to find the angels, and all we learn is that she was unsuccessful.
She came back,
and now she's got to go find Azrael.
Yeah, she wakes up near a volcano.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
In the book, she's on a mountain in Svalbard, but there's volcanoes. That's clearly not Svalbard. We never find out where she is.
Yeah, and before it's like, oh, you're just mad it's not the books. We're not. The point is that she flies into the mountains, into the air, and she meets up with a bunch of angels, and inside of a minute, she convinces them to be her rear guard as she goes to find Azrael. That's who Ruta Scotti is. Mm-hmm. She's not somebody who runs off and hides on a mountain top and then runs back. Like, it doesn't make any sense. If you wanted somebody to overhear cliff guests, there were other ways to do it without changing who Ruta Scotti is.
Totally. I agree with that. The whole scene is just weird. The cliff guests look okay. The language,
like,
though. Yeah, they do.
Rat bats.
Rat bats. Listen, you don't have to go all Tolkien. You don't have to invent an entire elven language. But you can make it sound a little bit more like speech.
It's just some grunts.
Yeah, it's just some grunts. Again, it's like, I don't know, give him some grunts or something. Do we have a guy who can do voices? Great. You know, book him 5 minutes of studio time.
And then there's some grunts and some subtitles. That does not a language make.
Yeah, it's like the grunts didn't line up with the subtitles at all. They just were written on the bottom of the screen.
Totally.
Come on, guys.
Yeah, and listen, that may be a budget item that's probably feels wasteful, but it all affects things.
Yeah, right. Like, there are ways to do it. If you don't have the budget to do good sound effects, then show it to us another way. They speak English in the books. Every other creature
that's
we've encountered
true.
Speaks English.
So
the
why?
Cliff class are the first people to speak a different language.
Also, Ruta speaks Cliffcast?
Right.
Okay.
Ruta understands it?
It's very strange.
It's a very strange choice. Again, it's coming out of nowhere.
Yeah. So that's the witches. What else about these witches? Also, one of them was guarding Lyra very, very well.
Yeah, that you guys need a better guard. Because she was she was leading the pack in the previous episode when
she
got spectered.
She got spectered.
It's like, well, you screwed that one up. And then she falls asleep while Will wanders off and get shot at by a soldier. Lyra gets stolen, and then you get Spectre to death.
It's just 101. Not every one of them can be asleep. That's how you guard.
Right.
And that's, you know, if Will's going to walk off, he can walk off. It's because there were witches on guard. And mm-hmm. you can't just be like, all right, let's all go to sleep. Also, witches sleep. I don't know.
Yeah, the whole thing was strange.
The whole thing was strange.
Yeah. In the book, Mrs. Coulter shows up. She has an army of zombies. She has an army of specters. Mm-hmm. Like, you understand how it would be a pitched battle with the witches. Mm-hmm. But apparently, just showing one witch fast asleep getting spectered was a better choice cinematically. Again, I.
One I piece with the it. With the Mrs. Coulter witches thing is that she finally reveals the Eve thing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was, again, they've done three different reveals of this name. They've built it up so high that this sort of felt.
Yeah, it was strange because last episode we got her talking about the fall. So mm-hmm. we already had the fall revealed. So I didn't right. understand how the Eve reveal was a reveal.
It's a reveal in the book and it's a reveal at the same time in the book. But now in a much more compressed period of time, they've done so many reveals of this and so much emphasizing of mm-hmm. it. It's sort of how I feel about Mrs. Coulter and the monkey. How many different scenes are going to be devoted to showing us that she abuses her monkey? That
right.
the monkey, that she's bad, she's abused, she's damaged, she's going to hit the monkey, kick the monkey, then feel bad, and it's an abusive relationship. We get it. We are wasting time that we could be spending doing other things with this, like, overindulgence on Mrs. Coulter.
On an optimistic note, I do think that this is an adaptable story in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are huge challenges, right? Big conceptual challenges. And we've been talking about them mm-hmm. all throughout. And we will continue to. But, you know, just a handful of better decisions sort of consistently throughout these episodes, which previous episodes in the season I thought was a good example of them getting a lot better, would go a long way. Like, a lot of the issues with this series is, like, having the armored bears fight without armor.
Yeah.
Like, I get it that it's hard to adapt, but that's still just a crazy decision. That
it's a weird decision.
You know? And there's just, these are starting to pile up. And I think that if it was in maybe better hands, this would be a lot closer to the adaptation I think a lot of us were hoping for.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So what's next?
This is rough. We were like, what's we can't next? Be... Listen, we want it to be so good. Listen, while I'm watching this, I still love being in that world. I
yes.
still
You
want to
see the
it.
Next thing. Yeah,
yes.
I'm so optimistic. Should we...
Wow, you sounded really convincing just there. You sounded...
Okay,
I believed you.
I'm not optimistic anymore, but I'm still interested. And I'm still excited to be... proven wrong by the
that's the thing. I don't think it's gonna be like right. Like when Game of Thrones was being adapted, it was like, this is the most amazing adaptation. They're really mm-hmm. taking the right licenses. But over a period, and not just at the end, but over periods, there was, oh, that one that really went afoul, and why mm-hmm. did they do this? There were some really unfortunate choices regarding women. You know,
yeah.
a lot of things. But there totally. Was still the overarching feeling of this is epic and we're all really loving and enjoying this. And I'm still enjoying it. I still want to see where it goes. The actors are incredible. I don't know that I think it's got that kind of... Well, I know that I don't think it's got that kind of feel behind it where people are hanging on despite.
Yeah.
Despite. But I know it's really popular in the UK.
It is really popular. I'd be curious to see who it's popular with. Not that audience is like... One audience is better than another, but I could see this being really popular with like kids.
Yeah.
Which is great, which is awesome. And if this motivates them, as I think we've said before, to go read the book and get into the story and think about challenging authority and believing in yourself and, like, you know, girls in there seeing a positive
witch.
Role model,
yeah. Yeah.
a bunch of them. That's all good. There's some negative ones too.
Some negative ones. That's why I laughed. Some negative ones.
Right.
Right. Okay. So shall we talk about
what's
Will?
Next?
What's next? How shall we talk about Will and Lyra?
Yeah, let's do it.
We do get Will the scene where Will speaks Japan about Lyra. And I mm-hmm. thought this in the book, too, so this isn't necessarily a criticism of the television show. But does he not, like, know how demons work at this point?
Right.
Does he not know that if, first of all, if the demon's awake, the girl's awake? And second of all, if you speak something to a demon, they probably will also. It's like a tin, those tin cans and strings,
mm-hmm.
which you talk to a demon, travels along the string and hits the... Anyway, somebody needs to give Will an instructional on demons so that he understands how it all works. But they have that sweet conversation about she's my best friend and all these things. And they really... They're pounding it out. They're teasing it out a little bit more in the show. They're leaning far into their relationship, which is a good plan. It is a very important thing for the end that they have this relationship that's really central and important to them. So I would say that's a positive here, that they are spending time developing Will and Lyra's specialness to each other.
Totally. And that will obviously be super important going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no problems with that. I thought they emphasized it a little too much in the next day where they like basically rehashed their entire conversation. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I heard you and like, you're my best friend too. And
yes.
I love you
well,
forever.
I think the point of that was Lyra's still hesitancy at commitment. She had a best friend. He's in the underworld.
That's true. Yeah.
so I think it's like kind of pointing out Lyra's hesitant, like Lyra doesn't know if she can have a best friend anymore.
But in general, I thought it was good. Mm-hmm. Will's good. Daphne Keane's good. Amira Wilson's good. No revelations there. We knew they were really good in these roles, but they continue to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Right to the end.
Yeah.
Shout out Big Pan and his big fat panda face. We get one more.
So this was his main form in this season. What do you think his main form in the next season will be? The weasel? The pine marten? The kind of presage?
What is he doing in the next season?
Cat. No, puppy.
Oh, the puppy.
When he's a puppy on the shore of the
day. Yeah, oh God. Geez.
Horrible. Oh, absolutely gosh. Horrible. Talk about abusing your demon.
Yeah, that's like...
It's horrific.
I can't believe... You reminded me of that.
Yep, real bad.
Real bad. Probably. And then they may do something where like... It'll take him a while to come out of that form, you know, because he's just, oh, that's going to be so sad.
Yeah, I know. It's, well, or will it? They've got 8 episodes to go to the underworld, stage a war between all worlds, to set up the biggest heartbreak there's ever been, to introduce and resolve the Mulefa and explain how it connects to interdimensional particle physics. You know, 8 episodes. It's fine. It's going to be fine.
We'll see.
8 episodes. Blah. Okay.
I hate it.
I have another note to make before we move on about, and we get to like the Jhaari confrontation and Lee's big scene. About the monkey.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the monkey for a minute?
Yeah, let's talk about the monkey.
I know we've talked a lot about, okay, we get it. He's abused. Seeing her kick him was horrible. So thanks for that, everyone. The monkey is not seemingly a representation of Mrs. Coulter's soul.
Yeah, this is a real issue. It's the monkey seems fundamentally different from Mrs. Coulter.
Right.
And I know that there's that discussion in the first book about how sometimes your demon turns out something other than what you expected or what you wanted. But that demon is still, it's like who you really are. It's just that you aren't really accepting of the person that you really are. This monkey seems like a pretty good, animal. I don't know a pretty good entity, who like wants to help people and do good things and cares about Mrs. Coulter. And Mrs. Coulter seems fundamentally different.
And there's the argument that whatever you're seeing is part of Mrs. Coulter by definition, by default. We can't we can't say, well, that doesn't seem like who Mrs. Coulter is. By changing him, they're changing Mrs. Coulter. So I get that argument. But let's not forget that even though we're getting more screen time with the monkey and we're understanding the monkey and we're sympathizing with the monkey more, this is an animal that pulls a bat, a live bat, apart by its wings in the book, book 3, just to do it, just because he's curious.
Yeah.
So this whole rehabilitation of the monkey, first of all, he's obviously very cute now, even though he was evil. It does stir emotion for sure, because you're seeing the abuse of an animal. But I don't know that it's serving us to remind us exactly who Mrs. Coulter is. Maybe they're trying to soften because she will ultimately make a sacrifice. And so maybe this is all very conscious and going forward. But I don't know. It's just, it's off. There was a dark moment in this episode where he like held up the demon of the witch to the specter.
Mm-hmm.
That was dark. Yeah.
That's probably the darkest thing we've seen happen with the monkey. Honestly.
And the fact that she like lets him sit there in front of the specter and yells at him to get himself together.
Yeah.
And it's we get it. Abuse, self-harm. There's a lot of stuff happening here. But I'm confused by it.
I am too. I don't understand the utility of it. I think it's a less compelling story. I think it's not really going anywhere.
I want the screen time back to develop the other things. We get it. We got it from, you could cut all these pieces, all these scenes of Mrs. Coulter abusing her demon in half and we'd be at the same place.
Yeah, totally we would. I think it's such a seductive idea to like peel back the layers of Mrs. Coulter. And if I'm sure you go back and listen to some of our pods leading up to the series, we were really excited about that because they talked a lot about like, we're going to get Mrs. Coulter's history and we're going to learn like why she is the way she is and why she's so complicated. And I feel like the writers on this show, particularly Jack Thorne, have really fallen in love with that idea without really having anything to say about it. And so we keep going back to this like sort of superficial exploration of Mrs. Coulter's inner being that really is just her being mean to the monkey.
I'm so bummed. The series was going so well until this episode. It just shows you what damage a finale can do. A finale can really mess it up.
It really can.
It really can.
It's amazing how important it is to land it. And so much of this finale read like the writer of it had only like skimmed the previous season.
Yeah.
You know, like they kind of Rise of Skywalker'd it.
There was no lady helping on this one.
So Jack Thorne is sole writing credit on this. We don't know if there's a writing room. We don't know what the actual writing.
There's a writing room. Of course there's a writing room. I don't know what the process is. I don't know what it means when somebody gets. I know that there's more people involved than just the person who gets the credit. Absolutely. But if you're going to get the credit, you get the criticism. So that's
fair.
That's how we take it.
Yeah. And a lot of the issues we're enumerating here, I think, were issues that we had with the first season too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just seems like we went backwards in a big way.
It just was getting so little pieces were well done and things were feeling subtle and things were feeling like there's this big, deep base understanding of what's going on. And this episode, just the first thing you said to me about the episode while we were watching it was, does this seem, what was the word you used? It wasn't bloodless. It was like
bland.
It seemed bland. All these interactions.
And inert, I think.
Inert was the word. That's the word you used. A lot of it just feels inert. And that's not the way the rest of the season felt.
Yeah. Can I talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think this is one of my biggest issues with the series in general, but especially season one in this episode, is you have all these incredible dramatic moments built into these books. These books are filled with dramatic moments. And they're also like the bear fight or, you know, the escape from Bullvanger or Lee's death, like big tentpole events that you would kill to have just one or two of those in your story. And Pullman is so good at writing them. But there's also all these other pieces that, if they were done well, could play incredibly well on screen, I think. And I'm talking about Will meeting his father and that struggle they have in the dark and then the revelation.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah, we are. Or Mrs. Coulter showing up to take Lyra, which happens off screen. But like, I'm going to do a thing where I'm going to do like a hypothetical. And this is unfair because it's really hard to write anything.
Especially a thing like this.
So it's easy for me to say, well, why didn't you do it this way? But can you imagine if, say, Mrs. Coulter had been in this season very little, or at least very little in the last few episodes, and then things are going well on this hilltop, and then all of a sudden Mrs. Coulter, the one you'd forgotten about, this is something that Thrones love to do, you know, and at the end they screwed it up a little bit, but especially in the beginning it'd be like, oh, here's this thing that you forgot about and everything's wrecked and like it's just this shocking moment. What if Mrs. Coulter showed up at the end on the mountain? We don't know how she got there, but she got an army of specters and the witches who are invincible are all of a sudden dying and everything you think you know is being subverted. Instead, literally they shoot it where Mrs. Coulter is just walking along and just happens to notice Lyra asleep to her left and then just walks up with her and just goes, hmm. And that's it. That's the scene.
Right. It's also just very, very clearly the soundstage.
Yeah.
It's like the same 4 feet of soundstage that they're using for all of these things. And that's where budget comes into play. And I can totally understand that. But it wasn't. This is the one episode where I feel like the settings really fell below where they have been in the past and where they could have been.
Right. Or when Will and John meet.
You want to go ahead and talk about the Jaapari scene in full?
Yeah, let's do it.
But do you want to do Lee first, or should we do Jaapari?
Let's do Jaapari first.
Okay. So the big thing we have to note about this scene is that they changed everything when they showed Will watching a video of his father. They changed everything because him recognizing his father's face is such a key thing that changes it. He might have still known what his father's face looked like from photos and stuff if he hadn't seen that video, but he was recognizable on sight. It wasn't like, I kind of recognize him. Maybe he looks different. He's got a beard. In a certain light, it hits, and then I recognize him, and you recognize him in that final moment. But he looks exactly the same as when Will was watching a video of his father before he goes on that trip. And they also changed it by taking Yuta Kaimanen out of the story.
Yeah.
Contriving a way to get Will's father killed in a way that isn't introducing, well, he screwed a witch and she's mad about it, which I kind of appreciate. Like, why do we need this revenge story? It's a lot. It's a lot to take in. But several things happen because this is the way they chose to do it. First of all, you take Lee's victory away from him. Lee is trying to keep people off Jaapari, off Will. And he fails. The one guy that he let get away, or we don't even know if it's more, is the one that kills John Parry. So there's that. But also, it just, this whole thing where they know who each other is the whole time is emotional for sure, but it's saccharine. And it's unearned a little, I feel.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree. We don't know these characters, at least we don't know John Parry enough to be really invested in him and his arc, I don't think. I mean, Andrew Scott's doing a great job.
Yes, he is.
But we've only seen this guy for a couple episodes. Mm-hmm. And his death and his revelations to Will, it rang hollow to me. It rang like a very generic, you know, scene that, I don't know. I didn't find a lot of emotional weight to it because it was such an unearned cliche, I thought.
You know, they say that thing about acting, that the best way to show an emotion in acting when you feel one coming is to suppress it. Mm. And that as soon as you give into it, you sort of let the tension, you pop the balloon.
Oh, yeah.
So when you have the conversation or when you cry, it has to be really earned so that that conversation isn't releasing the tension too early. And I feel like the way it happens in the book where the reader knows it's them at this point, and the reader knows, but the two of them don't, and they have this really tense conversation where he tells him, you have to be the person. And like in the moment he's killed is when they recognize each other and they just have that one moment. Instead, he gets the conversation with his father, he gets the passing of the torch. They're changing Will a little bit. On a positive, I can appreciate having that conversation. It was touching.
Mm-hmm.
It was well acted for sure. Not just, what's his name, Hot Shaman, but Will is doing phenomenal work. Amir Wilson is great. He's what a find.
Yeah.
This kid.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it for that thing. It's also like cleaner than having to explain why they don't know each other. It's cleaner than having a revenge plot in there. But the nature of these stories, it's just told so fast that it's unsettling how neat it was that he got to have this conversation with his father. They're going for the big emotional moment.
Right.
And often when you reach for those big emotional moments is when they don't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it read as very generic, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, it was just like...
That's my son.
Yeah. Hey, can I say something controversial about Will? And this is not about Amir Wilson, who's doing great. I don't think this Will is very fierce or...
Agreed.
He's not... He just... So Will seems a bit generic. He does not seem like the like universe stopping force that he's described in the books. And hey, it's hard to create that on screen, right? It's much easier to just say that in a book. I get it. But I don't think we, the audience, really appreciate what Will is supposed to be. And it again, it just contributes to this sort of kind of generic read of this scene with his father.
Well, they're portraying him as a much gentler soul. That's okay. That's great. But everybody keeps telling him he's a warrior. 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 And that's... Here's the problem. They're equating his small moments of violence with being a warrior.
Yeah.
Those are different things.
Yeah.
And when he gets violent, he's protecting somebody. Sure. Absolutely. But I have a little bit of problem with the fact that he's capable of violence being the only evidence to support his warrior-ness that they keep harping on.
I agree. He is less interesting as just a kid. This is where it begins to feel like a generic, like, kind of kids Disney movie. Do you know what I mean?
A little bit,
because yeah. It's just like, oh, these two kids, you know, and they're just going to try and go have some adventures. And that's fine. And, like, kids will watch it, and I'm sure a lot of them will love it. But the Will of the books, the Will Perry, who has this, like, this force of character and this coldness to him and this, this like, stillness mm-hmm. to him,
mm-hmm.
We're not really seeing that.
No. I would say we do see it sometimes. I do see it in small moments with him.
Okay.
But it's just not been a focus. You know, you do see it with the way he's fighting through his pain. You do see it. So maybe there is some fighting through pain and that aspect of being a warrior. But I don't know. They just seem to be saying things that aren't quite earned. And going for the big father-son crying at each other reunion death thing.
Yeah.
Certainly touching, but... Why don't you just trust the story? Just trust. This is what I always yelled about the Harry Potter movies. Just trust the story. Trust the story. And it ends up okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And little things at the edges here too. Like, obviously the soldier getting through. So Lee failed. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. But that sucks. So the soldier just like wanders in. Like, again, it's like no way of building that up with any dramatic tension. It's just like, oh, right. Having a scene. Oh, here comes a soldier.
Also, we don't know who that soldier is. We didn't see him get away. There's no like, oh, it's the guy. It's just like, oh, there's a pop-up soldier. I guess he got away from Lee.
Right.
He's going to shoot anybody he sees on sight.
Right. Eh. And he shoots John Perry in the back. And even though we've seen demons get hurt when their people get hurt.
Right.
In this case, his...
The hawk did not.
Yeah. His osprey is completely unharmed.
Right.
Kills the other demon, which kills the soldier, as a way of just like, okay, take care of that. Like,
and then dies. John Perry wasn't dead, so okay. But...
He wasn't dead, but he was grievously injured.
But yeah, we see the human not get knocked down when the demon gets knocked down and vice versa. So how does he get shot? Yeah.
We just saw Lee... Scoresby gets shot in the shoulder, and then we see Hester
laying on
like,
the ground,
limping and laying on the ground. It just like that lack of consistency.
Just
right?
Lack
again,
of
it's just a little like, wait, what am I supposed to be watching?
These little things add up. They add up.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's so disguise your plot devices better, I guess. Because it's so clearly a plot device.
I get. But it's also, you don't have to choose. You can arrange it in a way that, yes, it's actually even more powerful. The demon's hurt manages even despite being hurt to scrape out, you know, reach out and pull that demon down and kill it.
Right.
That may be even more powerful, but it just seems like these inconsistencies are becoming more careless.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Oh boy. Shall we talk about Lee? Yeah. Okay. Wait, before we are done talking about Jhopari, I did like the Amir Wilson picking up the coat,
yeah,
putting on the mantle, the hood.
Oh, the literal mantle,
the
yeah.
kind of like fiery, like, well, I guess I'm this guy now. And I, yes, the trouble in his soul about it all, like, yes,
mm-hmm.
good, awesome. So there's my positivity.
Cool. Yeah, I agree. I like that. I like that detail. So we should talk about the Lee fight, the big moment of Subtle Knife, really the pinnacle moment of the Subtle Knife.
This moment was for me what the separation moment with Lyra was in the first series. And I feel as gutted about it not being good
yeah.
as I did. So it wasn't as bad. So the moment where they tried to separate Lyra and Pan in the first series was bad, and was bad for because they defied core things about who these characters are to do it the way they did it. So I'm mad about that. I was mad about that then. Right. Parts of this were good with Lee's fight.
Mm-hmm.
He did a little clever thing with the hat on the rock.
Yep.
I thought actually Lin acted it really well. I thought his lines were better than they've been.
Agree.
Yep. I thought, on the most part, the relationship with him and Hester was moving, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then there are things that just weren't, that just didn't happen. So when the Mrs. Coulter scene where he and Mrs. Coulter meet and Hester pushes her head against Lee's,
yeah,
I thought was a very clear setup for their ending. Because the whole, and if you read these books, Hester presses her broken body against Lee, which is something rare for her. It like surprises him. And I know with CGI, you can't necessarily do it just like that. But the fact that they're not even looking at each other when they die,
mm-hmm.
that is, takes the blood out of it.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
And just the epicness of this battle. This is supposed to be Lee alone, high on a rock,
mm-hmm.
in his surroundings, inescapable. And he says, I have 30 bullets. There's 20 of them. I have to get nearly, and he nearly does it. And the only one he doesn't get is the guy who he doesn't want to shoot in the back, but who eventually perishes because he sets the whole thing on fire. You don't have to do it exactly like that. But to rob Lee's victory and to rob him of the stakes of what he's doing, like, you know that he's doing this so that Jhopari can get away. You know that he's doing this. You know there are stakes. But it's supposed to be this unreal victory, you know? He basically one-shotted almost all of them. In a video game, that would be nearly impossible. And then he gets hit near the end, and it's the end for them.
Yeah.
And it's this Alamo. That's why it's called Alamo Gulch. It's not, the place isn't called Alamo Gulch in the stories. It's in another world, so there is no Alamo where they are. But, and certainly they're not anywhere near Texas, but it's called Alamo Gulch because in his world, it's a last stand. It's a famous battle. It's a very big deal. And he makes a last stand. And it's not, this doesn't feel like the hero on the ridge saving the day. It feels like he bought somebody some time.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. The logistics of it aren't very clear. Like, when he sets his hat on the rock, that was a clever little move. But then we see him, like, jog up the mountain and just, like, stop at a next rock. Why couldn't you just keep going up the mountain? In the book, it's very clear that he's, like, kind of stuck. And he's surrounded and he can't get higher up on this mountain because it's like bare rock and he'll just get shot. So he has to hole up on this boulder. And it's possible we're supposed to assume something similar about the landscape here, but it never looks that way. And so seeing him like jog up 100 feet and then just stop and at the next boulder,
mm-hmm.
you're going like, what? Why are you stopping? Just keep going.
Right.
Like, it worked for John Perry. Just follow him.
Just, yeah.
You're not even being, like, pursued, really.
Right.
And so that took, I thought, a lot of tension out of it. But I really agree with you about, instead of Hester focusing on Lee at the end, even if they don't press their faces against each other, although I think they should have, and clearly they could because we saw them do it a few episodes ago, so they have the technology. The fact that Hester just has this, like, we did it for Lyra, generic right. line at the end, and then right. fizzles out while Lee is, like, looking off in the distance.
Staring away from her. These stakes, consistently the stakes that we always talk about with the books of having your demon while you die, it's... The closest we've gotten is that guy at the observatory, frankly.
Yeah.
With the demon pressing itself against him.
Right.
How do you, as a storyteller, not hold on to these two beings whenever anyone dies? These two beings are desperate because it's the last look that they're ever going to have at each other. Even if they're bad people, they still have this relationship with their demon, most of them. So how do you let that go as a plot device, as an emotional device? And they just keep letting it go. And this was the most... affecting one, at least for most of the people that I know that have read the books. This is an iconic big ending scene, and it just felt a little like any other death.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Exactly. It felt like any other death. And I think the script is so concerned that no one understands exactly why Lee is trying to help Lyra, that they felt like they needed to take this moment to like hammer in this theory. And again, it goes to like not really developing the story and the story's themes in previous episodes, that it feels like it needs to kind of cram everything in, which I don't think is necessarily true. I think the previous episodes did a better job than season one. But I think the writers here still feel like they need to keep hammering you over the head and like cramming all the necessary information. And so they just saw this scene as like a way of, you know, sort of checking off a box of like, he died for Lyra because Lyra is good and important. Okay.
Huh.
And it just sucks. It's like so much of this, it seems like you could have just given it to us in like bullet points.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
And maybe we just are too attached to the books, but it just didn't have the emotional punch, and it could have, even if they were just hugging each other, even if they were just closer to each other. I will say it was not without emotion. Seeing Hester broken mm-hmm. and crawling over to Lee was a very, very.
Totally.
Yeah. And very affecting.
Totally. And Hester in the scene was great. She was like all business and like, listen, like we don't have time for this. Just like in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about bacon. Think about anything.
Yeah, do this, do that. Left, over right, here left. On your left. Right, yeah. Exactly.
That was great.
And she blames herself in the end. And we did love the line. We both, I think, clocked this
mm-hmm.
when she says, I should have stopped you and all this stuff. And what was it?
It was like, I only pushed us when there was an adventure, and he was like, there's always adventures.
Hester, there were always adventures is a great Hester, there were always adventures.
That is a great line.
Puts
okay.
his, so there are yeah. more, like, yeah. So mm-hmm. I don't want to be too down on this. It was.
And he delivered it so well.
Yes.
He delivered it with, you know.
Joy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like no regrets there. Lynn, I thought, did this very well. And mm-hmm. this was a well-acted scene, some good moments, but it's just.
I know, you want more.
It's so short. You just wanted to go like three steps more. And not getting there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame. But we have the book.
Yeah, and we'll be talking about Lee in the
oh, yeah.
in the thing. Oh, yeah. All right, so a couple more pieces to this episode. Mrs. Coulter takes Lyra away in a box, shoves her in a box, puts her in a steamer trunk. Does raise the question of how Will's going to find them. So there's that.
Yeah, right.
Like, in the book, they don't go that far away. Like, they're like parallel on Oxford, essentially. And now they're going towards, plus a couple days walking travel. And now she ends up stored near the Himalayas, which is far away.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see. Also, where'd she get the trunk? Where's all her stuff? She came into Chiricahua.
Yeah.
She has a change of clothes. She got Lyra in a box. Where'd she get it?
It's very strange.
Spectres are her only friends. Did the monkey go get a box? Or was there a store? Where's this boat? It's weird.
Right. Did they go back? She's on an airship? No,
she's on a boat.
She's on a boat,
she's on
right.
a steamer.
Yeah.
Lyra's in a steamer trunk.
It's very. When I saw that boat, I was like, oh, we're going to get a little shot of the Egyptians before the end of the season.
Right.
But nope. It's Mrs. Coulter with Lyra in a trunk.
And then Asriel.
And then Asriel. And so this, I loved.
Agreed.
I loved.
Agreed.
I thought it was so cool. I thought James McAvoy did such a good job delivering this monologue.
I'm so sad we're not getting that episode of him.
I know.
They better put some of it in the beginning of the next one.
Yeah, give us more Asriel in season three. Montage, yeah.
Particular note, Asriel's hair is gray.
Oh, that's
Asriel's hair is gray in this section, and it's very important because it wasn't gray the last time we saw him, and it shows that the kind of notes about he's been playing with time are true.
Mm-hmm.
So he has been in a different time world. Maybe 30 years have gone by for him. Who knows? 20 years, whatever. His hair has grayed. Well, I mean, he's human still, I think.
Yeah, but I wonder if, I don't know. Yeah.
Whatever it is, boy's been working.
Yeah, it's really cool. I think the speech we get is like, we could have used the speech 10 episodes ago.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's like, oh, this is what we're fighting for.
I think they should have had a minute or two of Asriel in every episode this whole season to show us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they were planning this one shot where we went back
Right.
This bottle episode of Just Asriel.
Which I think would have worked wonderfully.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Because he's not in the second book, really. So it's a challenge of the source material.
But also, he was like working with Philip Pullman. They were to
flesh it out, right?
To flesh it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope, even if we don't get it in season three, I hope, if not, maybe we get a little like novella of what Asriel was up to.
Yes, Philip Pullman.
Yeah. Has the
Let
story.
Us know. But yeah, this monologue is, I believe, excellent.
I think it's excellent. I think it's beautifully shot as like coming over everything else that's happening. You know, Will taking up the hoodie of destiny, and
so many hoodies nice. This week.
Yeah, it was so cool. I thought showing us just Mrs. Coulter with the trunk before she opened it up and showed us what's in the trunk was great. This is dynamic, exciting filmmaking. This mm-hmm. is moving. It's beautifully shot.
He says, "Together we can build a republic of heaven above." Not clear where he is.
And that's okay.
That's okay. It looks like he's in the hell that's depicted in the Netflix series Lucifer.
Oh, interesting.
It looks very like that hell. Yeah. But yeah, he says, "Together we can build a republic of heaven above and a republic of ideas below. Worlds in which the scars of history may be healed. Better worlds where the privilege of freedom becomes the right of all peoples." Just telling the world how it's going to be, but it's good. It's well written.
It's very well written. It's very well delivered and well shot. It's the first time this season or last season. I think it's the best moment of the series so far.
I agree.
I will say.
I think it's
the first time that I'm like, yeah, this could be a great show. I am disappointed when the angels started showing up again. I thought that was a little like, here are the angels. There was no, I don't know.
I like the shooting star angels that then turn into body.
Yeah.
Angels. I like. That notion. I like the idea that like they're showing themselves to him as whatever they are, but that's not what they're primarily composed of. They're just showing themselves to him in a form that they understand, that he will understand.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
And they're silvery and they're massive and they're imposing, and he's just like the way he says all of you who have rebelled, like he's specifically speaking to angel, like there's angels on the authority side and there's angels on his side, and he's calling out to them. I don't know if he's at, I mean, is he at the summit? Is he at the place where above them is the silver city? I don't know.
Well, I think importantly, he's in a plane of what looks a lot like basalt to me.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that basalt is what his big old castle, his fortress is made out of.
Yes.
It's like mountain-sized blocks of basalt. So, it could be. It could be the world where he builds his palace and assembles his army.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very possible.
Well, so Asriel's building his army and everything ends except we get one more scene.
We get one more scene. It's after the credits. Go back and watch it if you haven't.
Mm-hmm.
We see our old friend.
Roger, the way Lyra says it, Roger. Have to do it for Roger. This is what happens in the book also. Whatever sleeping trance Mrs. Coulter has put her into,
mm-hmm.
she dreams of, is in the realm of, visits with Roger. Will Rogers. Roger.
He says, Lyra, help me.
Lyra, help me.
And then Lyra says, Roger, what is this place? And it's a fade to black. I love that. It ended on a strong note.
Mm-hmm.
I love that little tease.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It's a little confidence about where they're going. I just don't know they're doing this in 8 episodes.
I know.
But we will be there with you to talk about it all.
We will. So next week, as we said, we are going to do kind of a wrap-up of the season.
Mm-hmm.
My ire will have cooled a little bit.
Yes.
We'll have more.
Email us, extraneouspod@gmail.com. We're going to do a wrap-up of the season. We have a bunch of mail that we haven't answered yet. So we will do that next week.
Yeah, please keep sending it to us. We appreciate it.
And tell us if you're feeling the same way we were. Tell us things that will make us feel better also about this episode. We want to love it. And if you can convince us, we would appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you for hanging in there through one of our more negative episodes.
Yeah.
We promise there is so much positivity coming in the uplifting feel-good story of Amber Spyglass.
And also of 2021, which I demand is better
than
2020. And yeah, we're gonna start digging into Amber Spyglass soon. So again, wrap-up episode next week. Following week, we're taking a break. Next week, chapters 1 and 2 of Amber Spyglass.
In the meantime, in the new year, have a good new year.
Yes, please. Safe.
Safe.
Wear your mask, wash your hands.
Yes. Do those things. Social distance, as long as we need to keep doing it, please. I know it sucks, but we got to do it.
We'll help you through it. We're here on a podcast. Yeah. There's something you can do alone.
And there's one more thing you need to do.
Well, no, no, no. Go to our Patreon first.
Oh, and there's two more
there's
things,
two
you,
more
need
things
to do.
You need to do. We have a Patreon. We put extra content there. We have a Discord where we talk about all these things. I would love to talk about this episode with y'all on Discord. So please do that. And that is at patreon.com/makingmischief. That also helps us make more episodes of this and every show on the Mischief Media Network.
Mm-hmm. You're going to start one of those online petitions to remake the entire massive, like the end of Star Wars. Just kidding. We're not going to do that.
Quickly. We didn't do our extra awards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So look. Listen, We're editing this one real fast because scheduling this week has been a nightmare. So things are a little bit out of order. Thank you for dealing with us. Who gets your extra award?
My extra award goes to the Spectre.
Which one?
All of them.
Okay. The body of Spect.
Think about your life. Think about your choices. You're following Mrs. Coulter. You're an awesome, mealy little ghost dementor thing. I just feel like you can do more with your life.
That's fair. I'm giving it to whichever writer decided that they had Phoebe Waller-Bridge as a demon's voice, and we got like four words of her.
Four words?
The
Guys,
entire
come on. I know
season.
She's busy, but...
Come on. Whoever decided to deny us Phoebe Waller-Bridge, you're on my list. Especially in concert with Hot Shaman.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a choice.
What a choice. Yeah, like what a great casting choice. What a way to just... Again.
I'm mad about it.
Throwing off of the dramatic tension.
I'm mad about it. All right. We are clearly extra. We are going to stay that way. What should you do while we do that?
You should stay extra.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.